Greece passes some deep budget cuts.
And people in the streets are not very happy.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for checking out the Marketplace Midday Update podcast from Marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, June 29th.
Coming up on the podcast, Bank of America settles a big lawsuit.
The IMF gets new leadership, but is everyone on board?
And later, some Austrian soldiers deliver some fleeting glances for the birds.
We'll explain later on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Greece's parliament today passed a controversial austerity bill. Budget cuts that had been demanded by the European Union and the International Monetary Fund. It was a requirement for Greece to get more bailout money and avoid default.
Now, the reaction on the streets of Athens has been violent, and reporter Joanna Kakissis is watching that and has more on today's critical vote in the Greek parliament from the capital city.
Thousands came out to protest the anti-austerity measures, even though many people knew lawmakers would pass the bill. But they hoped the resistance would sway the few lawmakers who were on the fence. Many people believe the spending cuts and tax hikes have done nothing to cut Greece's massive sovereign debt. Greece is still on the verge of bankruptcy a year after the European Union and the International Monetary Fund imposed the austerity measures in exchange for 110 billion euros in international bailout loans. I talked to one 52-year-old factory worker who drove almost 3 hours for today's demonstration because she says everyone else is unemployed back home and she doesn't want her company to close too. Now that the package has passed, the government faces the daunting task of implementing it. Polls show that as many as 80% of Greeks oppose austerity measures. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
Another big story we've been watching today, Bank of America has agreed to pay a group of investors $8.5 billion to settle a lawsuit over mortgage-backed securities that went bad in the housing bust. For more on the significance of this, let's bring in Richard DeKayser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group, and he's with us now from Boston, as he is every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Richard, how big of a deal is this settlement?
Well, I think it's a pretty big deal. You know, for the past 2 years, the Federal Reserve has been pumping cash into the banking system, and they've been making money, and their capital levels, which is the pool of funds set aside to cover for loan losses, basically, is at the highest level in over half a century. But lending has still been tight. One of the reasons, among others, is simply that the uncertainty related to these litigations has put a big inhibition on firms lending. So, beginning to resolve this, putting hard numbers where previously there was mush, I think is going to help them move past this event and ultimately lend more money.
But this settlement doesn't end all the uncertainty for banks, right? This is just the beginning.
Well, it is. You know, earlier this year, Bank of America announced that it had an upside potential liability of about $30 billion. So in that regard, this is only a beginning, and other institutions are surely lining up behind them.
And Richard, why are the banks here responsible for these mortgage investments that went bad? If I buy a stock and it plummets, that's my tough luck, right? I mean, what's different here?
Well, the difference here is that the representation of those investments, in other words, the mortgage securities were not accurately represented. Maybe the documentations on the mortgages themselves were not as good as they were said to have been, or at least that's the allegation. So the implication here is that they're basically conceding the point, trying to move on. And this is a big change because earlier this year, the position of Bank of America and others was fight till the very end. Now it seems like they're more eager to move on.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks so much as always.
My pleasure. Take care.
Well, today the Defense Department teams up with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to launch the Military Spouse Employment Partnership. The goal is to find jobs for military spouses here at home. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports it's a tough task given how a military family has to move around so much.
Careers in the military require constant relocation from one base to another. That makes it hard for the spouses of service members to hold down a job.
They have an extremely high unemployment rate, nearing 30%.
Kevin Schmiegel is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
You have lots of military spouses with college degrees, even with PhDs, that are currently not employed because of the transient nature of their families.
A spouse's career becomes especially important if a soldier is injured or killed. Tom Tarantino with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America says military benefits do help, but they won't pay for a vet's kids to go to college.
Suddenly, this person who was in charge of keeping the home front now has to go out and be the primary breadwinner.
So far, 72 companies have signed on to hire military spouses. This summer across the country, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce will be holding job fairs for vets and their spouses. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
There are reports today that News Corporation will likely sell the fading social network MySpace. As for who in the world would want to buy MySpace, we still don't know. Meanwhile, General Mills reports profit was up by nearly 50% in the last quarter, but higher fuel and food costs are to blame for a weaker company forecast.
Another tech company will file paperwork today for an initial public offering. This time it's Zynga. The maker of the online games Farmville and Mafia Wars is hoping to raise more than $1 billion from investors.
Check out more numbers, stocks, and others inside our website, marketplace.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. The program is at Marketplace Radio. I am at Jeremy Hobson.
And I am at Radio Chio.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. China said today it supports newly appointed International Monetary Fund Chief Christine Lagarde. The French finance minister was appointed to that position after some jockeying among other countries, including China and Mexico. Simon Johnson is a professor at MIT and a former chief economist at the IMF. Hi, Simon.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Do you think the IMF missed an opportunity by appointing a European versus maybe someone from an emerging market?
Yes, I think they did. Ms. Lagarde has some very strong qualifications, but she also has a conflict of interest in that the French government, where she's the finance minister right now, is up to its eyeballs in the Eurozone and Greek mess.
Do you think Lagarde's going to show some sort of favoritism toward Greece because she is a European?
She will show favoritism towards French banks, not towards Greece.
Because the French banks, of course, hold so much of the Greek debt.
The French banks are exposed to Greek debt directly and indirectly. But the big issue is the French banks don't have enough capital. And the French are very worried about what would happen if French banks or German banks or Italian banks were to collapse.
How far in the future do you think we'll know that she was a good choice or a bad choice?
I think you can look out about 2 years, see what happens in Greece, see what happens in the Eurozone. If they really turn the corner, these will be indications of success. But I'm not optimistic.
What about beyond Lagarde's term at the IMF? Do you think the emerging market question will come up again?
It's bound to come up every time that they pick a new managing director, but the emerging markets are not well organized. They don't see themselves as having convergent interests. You should expect Europe to predominate at the IMF for a considerable period of time, and I think that will undermine the legitimacy in the institution around the world.
Simon Johnson, MIT professor, former IMF chief economist. Simon, thanks.
Thank you.
Texas lawmakers faced a deadline today to pass a state budget, and they did it just in time. The legislature just yesterday hacked off $4 billion from the state's education budget. In South Carolina, though, there's a different problem. What to do with all their extra revenue? From station WFAE, Lisa Miller reports.
Last month, South Carolina lawmakers found themselves in an unusual predicament. State economists told them they'd have an extra $210 million to work with in the budget starting Friday.
We certainly haven't had surplus money the last few years. We've had the other problem.
That's Republican State Senator Wes Hayes. He thought it would make sense to use half of the extra money as tax relief for some businesses, and the other half to start making up for past cuts in K-12 education. The state Senate voted to increase per-pupil spending from about $1,600 to nearly $2,000.
Still substantially less than where it was a few years ago, but it would be better.
But 2 weeks ago, Republican Governor Nikki Haley said that wasn't going to fly.
The fact that we had additional money go into the Senate doesn't mean you go and say, oh, where can we spend it and how fast can we spend it? It means that you say, if you're not giving it in tax relief, if you're not giving it to pay down debt, you send it back to the taxpayer.
South Carolina's House agreed to only send $56 million of the extra money to public schools. But even that was too much for Haley. Yesterday, she vetoed the funds. The House votes today on whether to override that veto. One of those watching closely will be Linda Blackwell, an elementary school principal in Lancaster County. Over the past few years, she's had to cut summer school, lay off 5 teachers, and trim workdays for remaining teachers. She says lately, teaching has become much more challenging.
How many desks are in here?
This is 28, and there's two more here, so that's 30.
Some classes have swelled by almost a third.
You've got to be everywhere, and you've got to have eyes on everyone, and it's hard to do that if you're on one side of the room and somebody thinks, I'm not going to get called on, and it's going to be a little while before she gets over here.
Whether the extra education money comes through or not, Blackwell is getting ready to prepare her teachers for more of the same next year. I'm Lisa Miller for Marketplace.
John Malkovich, the actor, Jeremy, is getting into the fashion business. Mm. His clothing brand is called Techno Bohemian, a name he says that comes from an unknown, unpublished Italian novel, which is a little odd in its own right. Clothing includes Japanese denim, woven ties, and printed button-down shirts. I've seen it. I've actually been to the website. I think it's technobohemian.it is what it is. We're sure the line, like the actor, will have this serious edge, right? But what we're not sure about is whether Malkovich will have the design staying power of Mary-Kate and Ashley or perhaps Lindsay Lohan.
I didn't realize they had staying power.
Oh, yes, they did. Out of the world of professional basketball, which is on the verge of its first work stoppage since the 1990s, the NBA's collective bargaining agreement expires tomorrow, and players and owners still have yet to reach a deal.
For more on this, let's bring in Henry Abbott from ESPN.com's True Hoop blog. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Henry, from the outside, it looks like a bunch of rich guys, whether they be owners or players, arguing over millions of dollars. Is there any reason that I shouldn't see it that way?
It is definitely, you know, it's billionaires versus millionaires, and nobody in this fight is going to go hungry no matter what happens.
And what's at stake? We're talking about 50-50 split or 57-43. Is that basically what they're arguing over?
They have long had a system where players get 57% of what's called basketball-related income, and the notion is that as basketball earns the league more money, players earn more money. Now, what's happening in these negotiations is that's changing because giving the players that percentage of the income is too painful for owners, and they want to reduce that or change the structure entirely so that they pay players more of a fixed cost instead of letting players have such a big chunk of the money as it comes in.
Is there the risk of losing fans in the long term if these lockouts, both in the NFL and the NBA, drag out?
Oh, sure. American fans have a bit of a rocky history of turning on NBA players. And so the league has done a great job. They have tremendous young stars, and fans are very excited about these players right now. If they have them locked out and we see those pictures of these guys in their Armani suits walking across the sidewalk saying, no, they're not paying us enough, we won't work for you, it doesn't help. And so I think the league and the players are both cognizant of that. If they embitter fans to a league that they've sometimes don't love as much as they might, it could really hurt.
Henry Abbott, a senior writer with ESPN.com's True Hoop blog, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, Steve, let's go to Austria, where a big air show gets underway later this week, and authorities are worried about storks that they could
bringing
be
babies.
They could be a danger to the airplanes at the show. I mean, you've seen these stories about like in New York where
like
the plane,
right,
exactly, the geese flew into the plane. Well, in Europe, they are not taking any chances. So officials, though, are not allowed to shoot the birds.
Yeah,
and they've tried to lure them away with food, but that hasn't really worked. Mm-hmm. So they're turning to Plan C.
What is Plan C, Jeremy?
About 24 soldiers from dawn to dusk will stare down the birds to intimidate them.
That'll show them.
Apparently, a little eye contact is all it takes.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.